Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA. I am delighted to welcome the President General of the American Irish Historical Society to the program, Thomas Dowling. And Tom is head of Realty Management Division of Goldman Sachs. And you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's terrific to be here.
As this is being taped, you have just arrived back, actually, from what was a 20-hour trip to India.
Indeed, in each direction, 20 hours.
In each direction, and 10 hours there, too. So, for those of us who have ever complained about any type of jet lag, I'm sure that... You can put that to bed for it.
Well, you know, the one benefit of a quick trip is I didn't have time to get jet lagged, so I stayed more or less on U.S. time, but it's great to be back here, back home.
You know, the selection, of course, the American Irish Historical Society, considering that former honorees, gold medalists, included Presidents Theodore Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan, and you could take Cardinal John O'Connor, musician Bono Lee Neeson, Loretta Brennan Glucksman, Chairman Emeritus of the American Ireland Fund, Mary Higgins Clark, Don Keogh, many very significant luminaries through the years, and going back for 117 years.
Correct, 117 years, and this year we have a particularly wonderful honoree, Wilbur Ross, as deserving as any of the names you mentioned, prominent as they are. Wilbur is, of course, a legendary investor, private equity investor, specializes in turning companies around, has done a remarkable job of that across industries and over many years, and led... most notably and most relevant for us of Irish origin, led a landmark investment in the Bank of Ireland in 2011, which served not only to keep the Bank of Ireland independent of state hands, but importantly served as a vote of confidence in the Irish economy, which was very important at the time and really has led in no small way to the recovering Irish economy. So we're very, very pleased to have Wilbur as our gold medalist, and we look forward to our dinner on November the 6th.
Let me welcome Wilbur Ross and, Chairman and CEO of W.L. Ross. Will be a very welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on.
You know, we have reason to be particularly grateful to you, and I know that you don't particularly appreciate the word grateful, but if we go back to a time when Ireland's struggle with the sudden death of the Celtic tiger brought nothing but negative news throughout the world, you led a group of investors, and as Tom Dowling was saying there, that led to a great boon for the Irish government, who at that point faced massive problems. But your consortium, your group, moved in there at a time when it not only was it necessary, but I think that everybody from the Taoiseach to many throughout the island of Ireland would acknowledge that you lent credence to what is turning out to be a great prediction on your part. You know?
Well, I think Ireland deserved it. And I agree with you, they needed some outside support at that point. But we felt that Ireland had done very, very well before the banks contracted the American disease of getting a little crazy, and that if they could get over that, then things would be very good again, because it's a very well-educated, very young population, the only English-speaking country that uses the euro currency.
Right.
Very good information technology and transportation infrastructure, favorable trade balance, and what few people know, more foreign direct investment from U.S. corporations than any of the BRIC countries. Back at that point in time, was about $160 billion. So in some ways, that's the real cement between
right.
Ireland and the U.S.
However, this was a time in Irish history when the popularity and success of Ireland in the financial world was now getting bolted from all sides. So whereas the inward investment was terrific, but it needed a leader, you know, to come and, you know, I'd like to be a fly on the wall with your own investors and those, you know, who might have raised eyebrows when you said, listen, we need to get into Ireland. And, you know, they were, I'm sure they were looking sideways at you and saying, I hope he knows what he's doing.
Well, fortunately, we don't need their permission to do what we do. The way we're set up is that they turn the money over to us,
mm-hmm.
and then our job is to put it to work productively. But I must say, our first advisory board meeting after the yeah. event, when we put the money in, was not a happy one.
Yeah.
For one thing, well, right now it's worked out. My immediate reward for buying in at 10 euro cents
yeah.
per share was the stock went to 8 cents. Therefore,
at a hairy meeting, as we say.
Yeah, therefore those people thought, well, you know, he's getting a little old. Maybe he's losing his mind slightly. Got an Irish wife. You know, maybe this
yeah.
is not a good thing.
Yeah, a little domestic pressure there, you know.
No, not for my wife.
Okay, we wouldn't expect you to admit that anyway, but it didn't do any harm to have the Irish wife. Look, can I ask you, though, about what we know you and got to know at a time when, you know, Bethlehem Steel was going bankrupt. And numerous ancillary companies, and the whole thing was just going into the gutter. And you saw, again, you know, an opportunity. Where is that motivation, and how do you say this can't happen? And how much of it can we say is, you know, is associated with your patriotism, your you know, your skill in that area?
Well, our job is to make money for our investors, so we don't do anything, frankly, out of purely altruistic motives. But very often, both as in the case of Ireland and in the case of steel, you can do well and do good at the same time. And to us, that's the ideal set of circumstances. And in the case of steel, what happened was the industry had gotten into very great difficulties. And a strange anecdote, given that we're in the building of the American-Irish Historical Society,
yes.
this building originally was the home of the president of U.S. Steel.
Right.
A long, long time
coming
ago.
Full circle. Hmm.
Yeah.
And on the day when I made my investment in steel in America, U.S. Steel's market value was back to where it had been in 1917.
Wow.
And this was in around 2011.
Yes.
So I wouldn't say things had come full circle, but that's
yeah.
a pretty discouraging thing. that that many years later they were back to where their market cap had been.
When you look at the story of steel, and again the center in that sense, that is to say that was the most prominent investment that we were aware of, there was a sense that we were losing, you know, the steel and the industry, you know, to competition throughout the world, and, you know, we were being undercut, and, you know, that was pretty much it, so you take your lumps and let that be it. Was there, what was the primary reason for the...
We had three theories in going into the steel industry. The first theory was worldwide pricing of steel was below the variable cost of producing it. So we felt either there would be no worldwide industry or things would change. So that was number one. Number two, there really was dumping, particularly from the Chinese, but also from others. And we bet that we would be able to convince President Bush to put some sort of tariff relief temporarily. We just needed it for 1 year, right. And it turned out we got it for 1 year. I must confess he's not particularly Irish, but he saw the light of day.
We did all right by it.
Yeah, and then the third... And the most important thing was I went to the labor union. We have very good relations with unions, which may sound strange given what we're doing. But I went to the head of the steelworkers and said, I think this industry can be saved. And it doesn't have to be saved by cutting wages of the people. What does have to happen is we need to change the work rules, we need to change the definition of job classifications. In effect, we need to get rid of the feather bedding.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'll do that, we'll put the capital in to revive this industry, and we'll put in new management. And Leo Gerard, who was the head, still is the head, of the steelworkers, made a very courageous decision. He was, a few months later, going to be up for re-election as head of the union.
Uh-huh.
And so here he came and made a concessionary bargain with me. And later, he happened to be in my office the day when we went public, and he was actually very happy that we had made some money out of it, because he knew we had saved 100,000 steelworker jobs in the U.S., and we got to where we were the lowest cost producer. Used to take 2.5 man hours to make a ton of steel. We got it down to 3/4 of a man hour. And the way we did it was we put in blue-collar incentive payments. I'm a big believer in blue-collar incentive payments. Maybe the only one in industry in America who believes in it. But anyhow, so we set a production target for each shift on each big machine. And if that crew hit their target that week, they all got a bonus in their next biweekly paycheck, regardless how the company was doing. Even if, as was true in the early days, we were losing money, they got their bonus. And once that started to happen, it changed the frame of reference between labor and management. Our theory is labor and management are each other's prisoner. They only have one employer. I only have investment in one company. Either we're going to do well together or we're going to die together. And once they understand that you really mean that, you can work with labor. I've found that labor union leaders in America generally understand the economics of the business at least as well as the executives, and sometimes better.
Wilbur Ross, I want to ask you about your prediction with your first investment into Ireland. And as we know, that had, you know, it turns out that that was, you know, a very good risk factor and turned out all right. But you also predicted, perhaps singularly, that the turnaround in Ireland would not take 10 years or 15 years, or even those who were supposed experts in monetary predictions were saying, listen, Ireland isn't going anywhere for the next 10 years. But you had actually almost pinpointed the recovery and the recovery point. What was it about Ireland at that point, at a slower step, that signaled for you?
Well, first of all, we had looked at Ireland for about 2 years intensively before we went in. Second, I think people didn't understand how good the government of Ireland was. The very painful decisions that they made early on in the crisis, which were quite significant, and the old government that made those decisions, I got to know the people because we were there at the time. Yeah. They knew it would probably cost them the election, and yet they did it anyway. Very rare to find a group of politicians that'll endanger their own re-election just to do the right thing. So that was one. But I think the most important thing was when they did put in those unfortunately very harsh measures, unlike Southern Europe, you didn't have nationwide strikes, you didn't have car bombings, you didn't have violence. Yeah. The Irish people understood that things had gotten out of hand and needed to be corrected. So we felt that Ireland would be the poster boy for all of Europe.
Yes.
And it really has turned out that way.
Now, that does not take away from the reality that taking the bull by the horns initially was a very bold move and came at great cost to the Irish taxpayer.
Yes.
Again, there are many who would have to admit at this point that nobody said, by the way, this is going to be a short run here. It was basically Ireland had kind of bent to the will, you know, of Europe, you know, and he who pays the piper calls the tune. Where is Ireland at now, with respect to what many feel was kind of a fire sale, a kind of sellout at that particular time?
Well, there are several questions in that. One, about the relationship with the Troika.
Right.
I think it's a little unfair that as Greece continues not to live up to its agreement, the Troika gives them more and more benefits, whereas Ireland lived up to the agreement quite meticulously. And I have argued with the Troika and the ECB so far unsuccessfully that you shouldn't be just rewarding bad behavior, you should be rewarding good behavior. And Ireland's behavior was impeccable. But I'm not a politician, I'm an investor. So while that's my opinion, I doubt that anybody in the EU will pay much attention to it.
But point well taken, but also, from your own lips, you have, said that basically, the integrity of Ireland, even through horrific times, remained intact, and that in fact, that's probably our best calling card. As we go forward.
Oh, I think it is, particularly in terms of foreign direct investment, because people now understand Ireland is not only a country where the government and the people will work with you in good times, they'll understand what they have to do in bad times. And that's the real test of relationship. The other thing I think that people missed when they had their gloomy predictions, Ireland, unlike most of Europe, is really a high-tech economy.
Yes.
And I don't think people focus on that. Ireland's economy is not based on cars or steel or things like that. Its pharmaceutical companies are the largest employers and the largest taxpayers. Medical device companies, software companies, internet companies. And to me, that was very, very important because those are not particularly cyclical activities. Ireland's problem was not business cycle. It was that the banks went crazy with making real estate loans. And as far as I can tell, when they ran out of bad loans to make in Ireland, they went to Spain, they went to Florida, they went to Arizona.
Well, you know, a lot of monkey see, monkey do. I mean, everybody else was, you know, seems to be on the
greatest American show. Banks, most of all.
Yeah.
I'm very happy with having done what I did do in Ireland. I'm especially happy that it's worked out as well for the people and for the government.
Wilbur Ross, I wanted to just let you know that, you know, the word on the street is that even without the benefit of an Irish wife, you should receive the American and be the medalist for the year. You know, it doesn't hurt, as I say, that, you know, to have this Irish wife. But will you get to sit like at the head of the table there, or will you have to share?
Well, I don't know. Tom will have to.
Well, let me say one thing. Just listening to Wilbur, and every time I talk to him or I hear him speak, I'm more and more impressed, and I am delighted that he has agreed to be our honoree and step into the path that presidents of the United States and noteworthy luminaries of arts and business have stepped into. But I think more importantly, I've heard many, many people over my career say that it's possible to do well by doing good. But I thinking about the investments that Wilbur's made, it's easy to characterize him as an investor, because he's obviously a legendary one. But thinking about his relationship with labor and thinking about taking companies that are struggling and turning them from near disaster into iconic companies, underneath that all, there are many, many people who benefited in terms of employment, continued employment, and financial rewards. And I just think that Wilbur is a spectacular honoree, and he will be at the head of the table on November the 6th, and
I'm
very pleased.
One of the areas, Wilbur, that I would like to address if momentarily is what you is where you see the United States right now in terms of recovery, of you know, financial stability, you know, considering that that's probably fallen off the radar altogether by virtue of their our involvement throughout the world and in what grabs the headlines. Where are we at?
Well, I think in terms of financial stability, we're very strong. I frankly worry that in the government's haste to make sure that we don't have financial instability, they may have gone too far. I think if you actually make the banks too safe, that's a great danger for the rest of the economy. It's very hard now for banks to get excited about making loans, particularly mortgage loans, with all the new rules and all the new litigation and all that stuff. So my biggest worry is that politicians typically, at least in the U.S., get pretty good and pretty aggressive at solving last year's problems, even at the potential danger of creating next year's problem. I think politicians in America are at best lagging indicators, not leading indicators, and that worries me.
Does the distraction of our involvement in war throughout the world, does that play a part in the economy, in economic recovery, and in progress?
I don't think so, particularly in the U.S. I do think, though, that if we had made the kind of intervention we're now talking about in the Mideast earlier, it would have saved a lot of lives, and it would have speeded up the process. I think it's very bad that we let ISIS get to the point where it could become the most powerful factor in the Mideast. At a much earlier stage, we could have done things a lot simpler and a lot quicker. I have a friend who's a former head of intelligence in Saudi Arabia, and I had dinner with him a few weeks ago. He's obviously very concerned about the situation, and I said to him, well, put in a very brief context, where is America relative to your region? And he said, oh, everything is fine with two exceptions. I said, oh, what are the two exceptions? He said, because of the current administration, your long-term friends no longer trust you, and your enemies no longer fear you. He said, other than that, everything's okay.
Time for a commercial. Tom, can we bring it back to you? The dinner, the upcoming dinner?
On November the 6th, we honor Wilbur with the gold medal. It's at the Waldorf Astoria. It is going to be a tremendous night, and Commissioner Ray Kelly, who happens to be with us here this evening, is the dinner chairman. And anybody who would like to attend, we'd love to have you. You can go to the American Irish Historical Society website, and it's going to be a great evening. So we're delighted that Wilbur is going to be our honoree, and it's going to be a terrific night.
I wonder if we could get Commissioner Ray Kelly just to join us for a moment here as we welcome our very special guest today, Wilbur Ross, the now elected and selected medalist for the American Irish
Ray is in fact a former honoree in his own right, by the way. So
we had that discussion already, and he definitely didn't think it was that funny that we had suggested maybe he would have to hand over his medal. That's it.
Oh, we could make that part of the ceremony.
Melt it down. Great honor.
Okay, and as dinner chairman, you know, in a short introduction here at the American Irish Historical Society, you did express, you know, the honor and the history of this building and what it meant in the success, not only in business, but in politics across the board. This is, you know, we are celebrating in this building the descendants of the Irish immigrants.
Absolutely. And it's a long history. It's a history, as I said, that has some difficulties and hardships and suffering, but it's also a history of significant success and achievement. And it's something that people of Irish heritage they can be very proud of.
You know, a year ago you would not have been able to, you know, hustle tickets for a dinner of any description. Now, can we expect that you, now that you have mellowed after your last job, can we expect that maybe you'll go a little easier on us?
You know? No, the shoe is on the other
foot. Oh, it is. Yeah, okay. No. Oh, well. Okay, so we're going nowhere fast there. Thank you again.
Great to see you.
Always
a great event.
It's always a great event. And again, we will continue, friends, to give you the information. And again, it's a great pleasure to be indeed at the American Irish Historical Society. society as we announce Wilbur Ross's election selection as the gold medalist of the society for 2014. Thanks to all.
And thank you very much.
And you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.
That interview, again, took place the other evening at the American Irish Historical Society. I just want to recap the information for the dinner. The American Irish Historical Society, indeed, along with Raymond Kelly, dinner chairman, have announced that Wilbur Ross, our guest this morning, is the society's gold medalist honoree. The dinner itself, which is their 117th, they're really getting the knack now of, you know, the menu and what everybody likes and whatever. 117th gold medal dinner taking place on November 6th at, what do you call that place down there on Park Avenue? It's a good address anyway. Oh yeah, the Waldorf Astoria. What you fans, what I might suggest to you is that you can call 212-288-2263 or log on to the American Irish Historical Society website. That's AIHS, as in American Irish Historical Society, AIHS.org. And friends, it's 11.